This is the Rick Edelman Show.
Let's take a question from Steve in Utah. He sent me his question via his smartphone. Here's his audio recording that he sent to askrick@rickedelman.com.
Hello, Rick. This is Steve from Utah, and I'm very glad that you and Jean are staying well. My father-in-law, age 90, and mother-in-law, age 86, on a recent visit, asked me to do a will for each of them. I know I can do this with software, print it out, and have them sign it, but I'm not sure that's the best option for them. I mentioned that the probate fee in North Carolina, where they live, is from 1% to 7%, and suggested we look into having a trust done for them. They have about $1.3 million in savings and investments, most in qualified accounts, but some in unqualified. About $230,000 of the total is in bank CDs and credit union accounts. Most of these have beneficiaries for their three children divided equally. I've also mentioned to them that we ought to start combining their qualified accounts into one IRA each. But with some money in annuity-type accounts, that may be difficult. They have three properties. Each of the three children will get one property each. This is the main reason I suggested a trust instead of a will. Do you have any recommendations or suggestions on how to approach this further? Thanks so much.
Steve, you're really good at this. You've got a good handle on the situation, and I think your concepts are entirely correct. I really can't add anything to it. And I do encourage you to proceed with your plan of going to an attorney, someone in the state where your parents live, not where you live, and executing the strategy as you've outlined it. I think you'll discover that the estate attorney would concur with your overall plan and methodology. The one thing that I would tweak potentially, you mentioned that there are several annuity contracts and you didn't know if they could all be consolidated. They very well may be able to, depending on what the surrender charges are with the existing contracts. If there aren't any, then there probably is an ability to consolidate them into a single annuity contract. So you would want to talk with a financial advisor to examine those contracts to see what the status is of those and the flexibility and opportunity for consolidation. Other than that, the rest of your plan is a good one, and I would encourage you to get going with it. Hurry up, hurry, 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 because we all know the best estate plan is the one that is done while people are still alive. You can do what Steve did. Send me your question with your smartphone, record your voice, send the file to askrick@rickedelman.com. Let's go to the phones here on the Rick Edelman Show. I'm talking with Rich. He's in San Diego. Rich, welcome to the program. What can I do for you?
Hey, listen, a little background first. I worked in San Diego for a large utility for about 50 years. And along the way, because I love real estate, I bought and still own 7 homes in San Diego. So and all of them are about 8 years into a 30-year loan and all fixed rate, as you recommend in your information. And they've all got about a $200,000 balance. So as I prepare my letters of instruction, upon my passing, I have intentions to give the one home to my wife we currently live in, and then the other 6 homes to the 3 sons, 2 homes each. So I was going along fine with my thinking until I ran across in my lender's documents a couple of paragraphs stating, in essence, upon transfer of property, that there will be required payment of all payments of sums.
Right.
I believe means that when I pass, that my wife and sons would immediately have to pay the remaining balances.
Correct.
I was a little bit shocked about that. I thought that they could just simply call up the lenders and say, hey, dad's gone.
Nope.
Send us the payments.
Nope. They lent you the money based on your credit report, your ability to repay. They did not pay the money to somebody else. It's the same as when you sell your home. When you sell your home, you have to repay the mortgage. And the lender isn't lending money to the buyer of your home, nor are they lending the money to the heir of your home. So yeah, loans generally have to be repaid. Now, a couple of issues here. If the ownership of the house is in joint name, meaning you and your spouse, and you get a loan, and the loan is joint with you and your spouse, and one spouse dies, then in that case, the loan will continue because the loan was provided for in the name of both people, and it's not an issue. But if you own the home in your name only and you get a mortgage in your name only, and then you die, the lender is going to demand repayment of the loan. And theoretically, the surviving spouse will sell the home and use the proceeds to pay off the loan, which is fine if it's an economic asset, but it's not fine if it's where they live and they want to continue living there and you want them to be able to continue living there. So there are several solutions to this problem. Number one, you can retitle the property jointly with your spouse and go get a new mortgage or have your spouse added to the mortgage. And with the lender's approval of that, the lender will not call the loan due upon your death. Another thing you can do is go buy life insurance in the amount of the mortgage balance. If you owe $200,000 on the house, go buy a $200,000 life insurance policy. When you die, your wife will get the life insurance and she'll use it to pay off the mortgage. She gets to keep the house. The lender is happy because they get repaid and you're done.
Right.
So those are the two basic approaches that I would recommend. Either of those strike your fancy?
Not so much. Another piece of information, I've also luckily have about almost $5 million in all in the stock market.
Well, then you can obviously use those resources, or your heirs can, to pay off the loans.
Right, right. That was not my original intentions. It assumed that I could pass that stocks along to them and they could pick up the loans. But now it looks like I've got to shift my thinking.
But it's not a big deal because out of the $5 million, you're talking about seven properties of $200,000 apiece. That's $1.4 million. You've got $5 million invested. And when they withdraw the money from the stocks or sell those stocks, they're going to be able to do so under current tax law on a tax-free basis because of the step-up in basis, even though Joe Biden is threatening to eliminate that. At the moment, it exists. They sell the stocks tax-free. They pay off the debt. And then they can go refinance those properties themselves and just reestablish the liquidity if that's what they choose to do. I'm not sure if they'll feel compelled to do so, but you could go about it in that way.
Right, and that was my thinking as well, is just to have them, I'm writing my letter of instructions for his final wishes, and I'm going to have to put that paragraph in there stating that take the stock.
Well, wait. What do you mean? What is this letter of instruction you're giving to them? You're telling them what you want them to do with the disposition of the real estate after you die?
Yes. I'm suggesting that they do this to sell the stocks, get the cash, pay off the loans.
Well, what if they would just want to sell these properties?
Well, they could. But each of the three sons live in one of the three houses.
Oh, this is their home?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was under the impression these were rental properties other than the one your wife lives in.
Well, no, I own them, but they live in them. They rent from me.
Got it. Here's my point. It is very difficult to manage assets from the grave. So your letter of instruction or your desire and wishes of telling them strategically and tactically how you want them to manage the assets that they're going to inherit is extraordinarily difficult, and you will have no ability to control whether or not they do what you want them to do. I would not recommend that you give them instructions on which assets to liquidate and how to transfer money and what bills to pay and so on. I wouldn't recommend that at all. Odds are very high they're going to ignore you, and you're not going to be able to do anything about it. You're not even going to know. What I would recommend you do instead is leave them a letter that focuses on your wishes on how they live their life as human beings. What are your aspirations for them in terms of their pursuits, their happiness, their care and concern for each other, the values that you consider important, that you want them to carry on in their lives and to teach their own children? Focus on transferring your values to them, not your bank account numbers. That's going to be controlled by your will, your trusts, your LLCs and other assets. Make them aware of what money they're going to inherit and explain to them that there is ample funds and assets for them to be able to do as they wish, whether it's to continue living in that property or whether they want to move somewhere else. I think you would find yourself in a horses to water environment if you try to get too detailed and specific as to what you want them to do upon your passing.
Okay, great. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Now, let me ask one other thing. These properties, there's seven properties. Four of them are lived in by family.
Yes.
Three others are rentals. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And all of these properties are owned by you as opposed to you and your wife?
All owned by me, yes.
And are they in your name directly, or did you establish LLCs for these properties?
They're in my name along with the trust, yes. There's no LLC.
All right, here's what I recommend you consider. Talk with your attorney about this. I get very nervous when people own multiple pieces of real estate, especially rental real estate, and they do all of it in their name. In other words, you, Rich, are the owner of seven pieces of real estate. Now, I'm not as worried about the family-occupied properties. Let's talk about those rentals. The issue is liability. If you have a tenant in a rental property and something happens in that property, somebody gets hurt from an injury, an accident, violence, it's easy for you to get sued. If you do something or fail to do something, it's easy for you to get sued. And so I argue that it's important for you to have sufficient liability insurance and that you title each property into a separate and distinct limited liability company, an LLC. Notice the words there, limited liability company. By having each property in an LLC where it is the only asset of the LLC, if somebody wants to sue, they're going to sue the LLC. It shields you personally. They can't sue you. You're not the owner of the property. The LLC is. And if something goes wrong with one property, they can't sue based on the assets of the other properties. In other words, if you have three houses, you should have three LLCs.
Yes.
So talk with your attorney about that structure. And in the course of doing that, the ownership of the LLCs can fit in nicely with the broader estate planning you're doing regarding your revocable trusts. So talk with your estate attorney and perhaps even a real estate attorney about the issue of creating LLCs to be the owners of these properties.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate that, Rick.
It's my pleasure, Rich. I wish you and the family the best. Thanks so much for calling. That was Rich in San Diego here on The Rick Edelman Show. 888-PLAN-RICK. RiceDelman.com.
These callers are pre-recorded and pre-screened.